The interesting thing, though, is there's a provision in the WNBA where you can core a player where...
Like an apple? That sounds violent.
What's up, nerds? It's basketball. Welcome to Horse, a basketball podcast about everything except for the wins and losses. My name is Mike Schubert, and I'm joined by my trusted co-host, the Gary Payton II untying Jordan Poole's shoe to Gary Payton telling the ref, Jordan Poole might be lying to you after being confronted by the referee after Jordan Poole told the referee, hey, this guy untied my shoe. It's Adam Abawala. Adam, how's it going?
I mean, maybe not since Lance Stephenson blowing air into LeBron's face have I seen such a tactic. I think it was that, and there didn't somebody like pants Paul Pierce at one point? Like someone pulled his shorts down on the bench?
Yes, I think that happened one time. And then J.R. Smith, I believe, untied some people's shoes before. Mm-hmm. There's definitely been some shoe untying controversies in the past. This time it was Gary Payton doing it to Jordan Poole during a foul line routine, like they were in the rebounding area on a foul shot, and they used to be teammates, and maybe right. It was friendly and fun, but it's always hard because the Jordan Poole leaving the Warriors thing was very dramatic and not necessarily leaving on good terms, seeing that it all started with Draymond punching him in the face.
Sure. yeah as we do to our coworkers in normal life.
Yeah, we do this to each other all the time. And then him leaving. Draymond, I mean, I forget what sparked it, but Draymond this week did tweet out like, I am sorry. Oh, yeah, because Jordan Poole had a post-game comment saying, I love those guys over there. I love most of those guys over there. And then Draymond Green quote tweeted it with, I am sorry, which like, okay, or I really am sorry.
Oh,
like,
well,
yeah, dude. I mean.
The really helps.
Yeah. I mean, come on, man.
I want to see someone tie someone else's shoes together.
Ooh, that would be a lot better. Yeah. That would take a lot of skill. That would take
like to do it without someone noticing would be very difficult.
You'd have to start learning magician sleight of hand style magic tricks to be able to pull it off, but I think it would be glorious.
I mean, I think nothing can ever top Michael Beasley rubbing his teammate's knee on the bench, and then you can clearly read his lips saying, oh, my bad, I thought that was my knee.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
How does that happen?
The only thing I could think with that one, which is an iconic situation, is maybe he, oftentimes you'll see players ice their knees on the bench. They'll wear some sort of like ice pack, sometimes like really, really big things of ice. So maybe he was so used to doing that he was used to the sensation of rubbing his knee but not feeling it.
Yeah.
That would be my.
You're giving him a lot of leeway, and that's good of you. It's funny, the gigantic like ice packs, I only think of Patrick Ewing. Like, so many people have used them, but like that is my mental image of Patrick Ewing. Anytime he wasn't in the game, was just like shuffling around with basically two ice legs at all times.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's definitely a Pat look. He was definitely the knee pads guy, even though there are some other people who did it. But yeah, I guess I am giving a lot of credit to Michael Beasley, a man who used to wear a watch on each wrist and an ankle. And when he was asked about it, he said, quote, I'm just finding a new balance. It's the new catchphrase. I don't have swag. I don't have feng shui. I'm not cool. I'm just balanced. If you see anyone with a watch on their leg, they took my balance. So, yeah. Look, this was in the doldrums of my Knick fandom when Michael Beasley was on the team.
Luckily for him, no one's ever seen anyone else with a watch on their leg. So he's alone in that category.
The wildest thing, not enough people talked about how he was also wearing one on each wrist. Like, yes, obviously the ankle's wild.
But both wrists and only one ankle?
Yeah. Maybe my
reason. That doesn't seem balanced. I think there should be one on each ankle.
That's true. I guess you would need one on each. Anyway, let's talk about basketball. So this is Horse. It's a basketball podcast. And in order to get ready for the basketball podcast, we go to the Teal Memorial locker room, which is perfectly balanced. Everything is very even. There's an even amount of lockers on one side, lockers on the other side, showers on the other side, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, yeah. And you can wear a watch wherever you want. It's a judgment-free locker room.
Look, you want to have a big watch around your neck, go for it, like your Flavor Flav. Mm-hmm. You want to have a watch on your belt loop, and it's the waste of time, like, go for it.
You can, is that a thing? That's that. Very funny.
It's a joke from a Jack Films video from, like, a long, long, long time ago. Either that or a Brett Barker video, like that guy, one of those guys that did like silly voice videos way, way, way back. I think a Brett Barker, I forget his name, but he used to like make fun of people who left bad comments on his YouTube videos. And someone said, this is a waste of time, but they spelled waste like your waist around your hip. And then he made some sort of like Photoshop thing where it was like a belt, but the buckle was a clock.
That's
so
funny.
It was the waste of time.
Love it.
Anyway, you know who else is perfectly balanced?
Our patrons.
Our patrons. Shout out to all of our patrons. Shout out to our producer level patrons, Polly Bird, Salvatore Testa, Siobhan Ellsbury, Don't Go Chasing Taco Falls, Bang Bang, Roast Beef Debris, Denver Steam Nuggets, Anna Reed, Steph Curry missed a shot, and I saw video evidence.
Yeah, there's this video of him that I keep seeing on Instagram of him doing the thing where he like shoots and then turns away and gets all cocky, but he misses it.
Whoa, I don't know that I've ever seen one of
those. It's so jarring that it makes me feel like it's like a fake video, but I'll find it and I'll post it.
Wow. That's wild. Mm-hmm. Hi, Trish, Chase Underulo, Naked Rachel, Sidney Crosby as a vampire, Chelsea's cousin, Ginger Spurs boy, Balls to the Balls, and Mats Furley. And to our patrons and stuff, our producer level patrons and people who switched, by the time you're hearing this, you should have your Patreon refund, or at least I will have processed it. I don't know if it'll go through until the end of the month, but I took a screenshot of the people who joined the Patreon so early that they got like extra charge and stuff. So by the time you're hearing this episode, it should be good. And if things aren't good, DM us on Patreon and we'll figure it out to make sure you don't get overcharged for being nice to us.
Yeah.
It shouldn't happen that way.
No.
That's not what you want to see.
You should get a nice discount.
Correct.
If anything.
Thank you, though, to all of our patrons. And thank you to someone else. Can you guess who I'm about to thank, Adam?
Probably our sponsor.
It's our sponsor, and our sponsor is Tap for a Cause. Tap for a Cause is great. You can very easily install it on your computer browser by going to tabforacause.org/horse. And you just do a couple of clicks. You install the extension and then boom, you can raise money for charity. Every time you open a tab, you get a heart. Then you can choose where to give those hearts. Right now, I have not done this in a while. I've got 433 hearts live right now. I
Whoa.
Am going to give to water.org. Just giving water to people in need across the world. Great cause. There's lots of other good causes that you can support. And we'll do our classic tradition of a tab check. I've got 4 tabs open. How many tabs do you have, Adam?
I'm in the 20s.
Okay. Not absurd. But
no,
yes,
I'm more concerned with the amount of folders that I need to organize into larger folders on my desktop. I kind of do that thing where like I let it get out of hand and then I'll just spend half an hour sorting everything.
I feel you. I do that with my downloads folder. It's just full of stuff. But if you want to channel your tab energy into good, go to tabforacause.org/horse and install that today. Now, unless you're listening on Patreon where you get access to episodes without inserted ads, it's time for some inserted ads. They're locally inserted. And once they're complete, we'll get back into this episode of Horse, unless you're on Patreon, where we're going to just get right back into this episode of Horse. Adam, what do you got going on?
All right, I got a couple new dates. Shout out to anybody who came out to my show in Chicago. It was a great one. We were pretty damn close to selling it out. And I think there were some horse people there. I don't recall if I specifically talked to anybody after the show. But either way, if you came out in Chicago, thank you so much. I know that for sure I'm going to have some horse listeners out this Wednesday in Atlanta. So I actually just got a DM with an offer for a bagel.
Oh, I know who that is then.
Yeah.
That's Eileen. She hit me up with bagels when I did a show in Atlanta, and they are good.
Are they good?
I'm a very big bagel snob. They're good. They're, you know, believable New York City bagels.
I love that. All right. I guess I'm going to have to say yes. But anyway, if you're listening to this when it comes out, you've got no time to waste because I'm going to be in Atlanta this Wednesday, January 29th at the Laughing Skull Lounge. It's a small venue. Tickets are selling well, so it may sell out. I would go ahead and buy those tickets sooner than later. That is at 8 o'clock, just one show only. Then on this Friday, the 31st, I'm going to be in Glens Falls, New York at the Park Theater. That is in kind of like the Albany, Saratoga Springs area. So I'll be back up north if you're around. I have added some shows to my Texas tour. One in a city in Texas that I've frankly never heard of, but maybe you have. On Wednesday, February 12th, I'm going to be headlining Rose City Comedy. That's in Tyler, Texas. It's about an hour and a half-ish, I believe, east of Dallas.
I think it's in the ballpark of Austin.
Oh, is it? Because I'm doing.
I believe.
Yeah. So I'm doing Tyler on that Wednesday, the 12th, Austin on Thursday, the 13th, and then I will be in Dallas on the 14th and 15th. So Tyler and Austin, those are just one show apiece, and then Dallas is going to be four shows, but that's also Valentine's Day weekend, so there's a decent chance that that will sell out. Did you look it up, Mike?
I stand corrected. Tyler, you are correct. It is a bit east of Dallas. It's between Dallas and Shreveport. Mm. Maybe there's a University of Austin offshoot in Tyler. There's something that I thought linked Tyler and Austin.
Well, either way, apparently there's a comedy club and I'll be there.
Heck yeah, baby.
So that's the Texas run. The weekend after that, the 21st and 22nd, I'll be in Boulder, Colorado. That's probably going to be three shows. I think it's one on Friday, two on Saturday at a venue called Hotel Boulderado. And then a couple other dates to mention. March 1st is going to be Bennington, Vermont. That's actually rescheduled from February 1st. But if you're in kind of like the Albany, southern Vermont area, that's going to be at the Bennington Theater on March 1st. I'll be at the Stress Factory in New Brunswick, New Jersey on March 13th, which is a Thursday. And then I'll be in Bozeman, Montana on May 30th, which is a Friday. And I'm sure I'll be adding more dates soon, but that's what I got. You can go to my link tree, which is just my name, or my website, adamamawala.com/standup. Easy to find. Hope to see you out there on the road. What do you got?
I've got three shows in February and then some other stuff down the road as well. But the February shows, February 1st, I'll be in Hartford for a TNO show. And then February 9th, I'll be in Baltimore for a combo TNO and Potterla show. And then February 23rd, I'll be in Richmond for a combo TNO and Potterla show. The first two shows, not going to sell out probably. The last show, almost certainly. There are maybe like 20 tickets left for the Richmond show. So get on that if you want to go. I'm also coming to Houston on March 9th. And there have not been many tickets sold to that one. So please, if you live in Texas, come through to Houston. My beloved hometown is not showing me love. So come through, Houston. I do not understand.
Well, maybe they're just not, showing you early love. Maybe they're just waiting.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe Texas is a buy tickets last minute kind of thing, which is a thing in some states. Like that was what New Orleans was like. And I guess that happened when I did shows in Dallas and Austin. So maybe that's the case, but regardless, come on through. But that's going on in the near future. Then I've got a whole run through the Midwest in April, but you can get tickets to all of these shows at shubes.es/tour. And with that complete, Adam, we have an MBQ&A, yeah?
Yeah, actually we have a WNBQ&A.
Ooh,
how about that?
Alrighty.
So I'm going to read this full email because I enjoyed it quite a bit. But this email is from Cheyenne, and the question is, hello, Mike and Adam. That was not part of the email. That was me clearing my throat. I just want to be very
Mike
clear.
And Adam, it did not say throat.
Parentheses, clears throat. But the email does say, my name is Cheyenne, and I have a WNBA question for you. I know you've done it before for other listeners, but I was wondering if you would be able to give me a team to root for. So we're going to circle back to that. But some more context about Cheyenne. Cheyenne says, I'm the type of person to not really enjoy watching sports since I prefer to play them myself. But due to a shoulder injury, I have distanced myself from playing any type of sport. So I want to get more into watching them. And I thought this would be a good ask. Some information about me. I was an aggressive player and enjoy watching players of the same vein. I also love trash talk, even though I was the kid on the court who always found something to compliment my opponent. Credit to you. I also enjoy people just having fun and having an out there style. All right, so that is what we're kind of using as our basis for helping Cheyenne find a team to root for in the WNBA. And I am going to share the PS from this email because it was very sweet. It says, I've been listening to this podcast since like 2018, as I started listening to Potterless in 2017 when I was 13. Both of you have been part of my teen years and have influenced my own humor. And it's been amazing to grow with the podcasts in a way. It's been a comfort to know that when life gets tough, I can always rely on Horse or any of Mike's other podcasts to cheer me up. Thank you for everything. Mm. Well, Cheyenne, that's very, very sweet.
So sweet.
We appreciate that very much. And now we are going to answer your question by giving you a WNBA team that is fun, that has aggressive players, that has some trash-talking players, but also some who are kind. And then people just having fun and having their own style out there. So who is a team that threads that needle?
Okay. There is a team and then there is a player. A team, and I'm not just saying this because they're my favorite team. That would be the Seattle Storm.
Oh, okay.
Because
I thought you might go
they kind of have a player that does all the different things. Skylar Diggins-Smith definitely talks trash. Mm-hmm. Nneka Ogumike, very nice. Jewel Lloyd, very much like an attacking, driving player. Jordan Horston and Nika Mule both have very good
I'm sorry,
style.
Horston and Mule? How are they not on this podcast?
They both have fantastic style, different styles, but their pregame fits are always on point. And I think that kind of touches all of those different things. But if you're looking for a particular player who does all of those things, I would say Kelsey Plum checks almost all of those boxes. She definitely talks some trash. She definitely has great pregame fits, though she does like to have fun. She is like a silly follow on social media where like she'll, you know, post funny stuff from time to time. And
she's got a cigar line, apparently.
Right. I was just going to say, like, she'll do her own thing, which is very much that. So the problem with this, though, is that Kelsey Plum is currently a free agent, which is exciting. She was on the Las Vegas Aces, but there is rumblings of her potentially going to a team in which she can kind of be the main attraction because she's already won championships with the Aces. So, you know, you've done the title thing. Maybe you try to be the person, the focal point of the team. So at least our WNBA correspondent for Horse, Jordan Robinson, Jordan, not with any sort of scoop, just with desire, says that her being on the Golden State Valkyries, the new team this season, could be very fun because they obviously don't have the strongest of rosters since they've only been able to build from the expansion draft and then the draft when it takes place. So if she did go to Golden State, she would be like the person. So,
and you know what? I also think that it could be fun to like just choose the Golden State Valkyries as your team now. Mm-hmm. And then that way, for the rest of your fandom, if anybody is ever like, well, how long were you a fan? It's like literally forever. I was a fan as soon as I could. Like, it's kind of cool
that
being
a cool
new WNBA fan and being like, as a result of that, I am also going to choose the newest team that exists. Unless you want to wait for Toronto, which you can also do.
Right. So I think that's a good thing. Like, rarely do you have the opportunity to have rooted for a team for like the entirety of its existence. You can literally start at the ground floor and look, they got a cool team name. They got a cool logo. They got cool colors. They're in Golden State. They're in San Francisco. Like, it's, I think they will soon become a powerhouse because they've got owners who are okay with spending money. So it could be a fun ground floor. So yeah, how about the two suggestions, I guess three in total, the Seattle Storm, wherever Kelsey Plum ends up, or the Golden State Valkyries. Those are your top three choices.
There we go. And thank you again for the question and for the lovely words. We appreciate it.
Yes. Thank you so much. So with that concluded, shall we get into full court press? Get out like the news.
Let's do it.
Okay. So we've got some drama, we've got some fun, and then we've got something goofy. How about we get the drama out of the way? This is, I think, the fourth
episode. Gotta be Jimmy Butler.
It's at least the third episode in a row, and these episodes come out every other week, that we've said there's a new development in the Jimmy Butler drama saga.
I mean, at this point, and obviously there's a long, long way to go in the season, I think you could make the case for the Heat being the most dramatic team in the NBA thus far, just because of the Jimmy Butler stuff.
It's quite high. It's really, really high up there. So Jimmy Butler continuing to have a situation that is interesting with the Heat, where they suspended him for 7 games. He came back. He was playing but didn't seem enthused about it. He's like half-heartedly clapping on the bench and stuff. But he apparently missed a team flight, and then he was suspended for another 2 games for this. Now, this is a more normal thing. I don't think that he will be in a situation like when he got suspended for the other 7 games for just like being generally detrimental to the team. The NBA Players Association said, we're going to protest this. Mm-hmm. But I think this 2-game suspension is legit. It just happened to Zion Williamson recently for missing a team flight, but then it was also, or like he was late for a team flight, but then apparently also he'd been missing like some other stuff and was late to other stuff. So it was kind of like an accumulation sort of thing. And then he got suspended for a game and the NBPA didn't try to protest it. So I think that this is something that will hold up, but it's just more drama. And he's losing out on, like, he loses money when he's suspended. He doesn't get paid for those games.
Yeah.
So, like, his grumpy demeanor is losing him millions of dollars, which, like, I'm not always on time to stuff, but if I'm losing out millions of dollars for being late to something, I'm not going to be late. I'm not going to miss those things. Like, sure, I'll be late to certain things. I don't miss flights.
I always wonder what the protocol is there. Like, as a punishment, do they just say like, all right, well, you got to get yourself to where the team is, and like, that's on you to figure out your travel? Or do you think some travel secretary is like, we're mad at you, but here's a new first class ticket on a different airline?
I'm sure that they get them there in fine fashion. And
or
whether
fly
it's
them through, private or whatever. Yeah.
Right. Like, I'm sure that there is another way to make it happen. Like, there's all those, sir, I forget what they called, but like, there was a brief moment in time where Instagram thought I was like super rich and they were advertising them to me. I was getting targeted ads for like Wheels Up or something where you get on an open seat on a private plane going somewhere else.
Is like, there one of those things that says like Mike Schubert net worth $4 million or something silly like that?
There's one that says my net worth is like $11 million, but it's not me. There's like a different Michael Schubert who I think is in like the film industry. But I also think like one of them has the weird thing where it like combines a couple of different Michael Schuberts. Like there's me, there's the person in the film industry, there's the mayor of Potsdam, Germany. And I think that they like have this inflated sense of like, well, this is all the same person.
Mayor slash podcaster slash...
film producer. But no, I'm not in that ball. I'm not in the let's take a private jet ballpark by any means, but I'm sure they get them there somewhere. But it's just, again, like more drama there. Also, there have been rumblings that a trade is on the horizon, and it's looking likely because the Suns just traded their 2031 first round pick, I believe unprotected, for three first round picks from the Jazz that are all either in this next draft or the draft after. And those picks are not as good because it's all like one of those, it's the least favorable of these two teams and stuff like that. So it's three kind of meh picks for one really good pick that's just so far down the future, you know, 6 years from now. The thought being that the Suns need stuff to trade that the Heat would want, and the Heat probably want to have picks now as opposed to picks later down the road, either to flesh out the roster or to use in future trades. So that's the thought there. And then why would the Jazz do this? Because the Jazz already have a bunch of young guys, so they're okay trading away three kind of so-so picks for one that might be really, really good if the Suns are terrible in 2031, which they might be because they have mortgaged their future to create this team.
Subpar now, and they shouldn't be, so who knows?
Right. So because of the trade being made by the Suns, there's been some rumors of there being a four-team trade where the Suns would get Jimmy Butler, the Heat would get some picks, and then the Bucks would get Bradley Beal, and then I think the Heat would also get Chris Middleton.
Oh.
And then there would be a fourth team that's in there just to make all of the salaries work. And there's also been reporting that Bradley Beal would be okay with going to Milwaukee. He has a no trade clause, so he can veto any trade, which is pretty cool. But there was reporting that he would not veto it if he was going to the Bucks, because the Bucks are good and he could probably play for the Bucks and hopefully contribute to them. So that's on the horizon. That might happen. But the Jimmy Butler drama saga rages on, but it might be coming to its conclusion.
Well, I mean, Jimmy Butler played at Marquette, and that's in Milwaukee. So maybe that's like a cool connection for him.
Oh, but Butler in this situation would be going to Phoenix.
Oh, I'm sorry. Never mind. So yeah, never mind. Okay. Well, forget everything.
So
it's hard to keep track of all the moving pieces.
Truly, truly, especially when you have a four-team trade. So that's been going on. In the WNBA, we have the Unrivaled, which has been going on. It's like not technically a WNBA league. It's a league started by WNBA players, founded by Nafisa Collier and Breonna Stewart. And there's like 35 to 40 awesome WNBA stars in this league where they play 3-on-3. There's some cool things in it, like an Elam ending style format where there's always a game winner to close out the game. There's a really good how does this thing work video on Unrivaled's Instagram that I think is very helpful for understanding the league, but it's pretty cool. I've been watching some of the games, like they're being broadcast on TNT, which is fun. There's a bunch of highlight reels up as well. And it's just the perfect WNBA offseason thing because they are able to make money without going overseas. They're playing and they're trying, but it's not like super duper high intensity thing. So ideally, injuries won't be as prominent as they can be when people are playing in like legitimate leagues overseas. So it's cool, and hopefully it continues to catch on and do well, because then you just get a perfect situation for WNBA players during the offseason.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, and it's easier for them. Like, all the games are happening in an arena, I believe, in Florida. I want to say it's in Miami, but it's like there's no travel, so that makes it easier. It's just like truly the perfect offseason thing for them to still make money and still get to hoop and stay in shape, but not have to do something that is so intense, like play in Turkey or whatever.
Right.
Yeah. As alluded to earlier, WNBA free agency is upon us. There's a whole list of all people who are free agents right now. There haven't been any moves yet because I don't think it has actually started at the time of recording on January 23rd. But there has been one spicy thing where Satu Sabali, who used to be on the Dallas Wings, has said, I have played my last game for the Dallas Wings. So we don't know where she's going, but she's at least maybe not returning to Dallas. I mean, look, she could help them.
Yeah, let's make it a five-team trade, in a multi-league five-team trade.
I would love it. I would love it. The interesting thing, though, is there's a provision in the WNBA where you can core a player, where it's a way to kind of like...
Like an apple? That sounds violent.
It's like you... I think football...
Yeah, like a franchise tag. Thing
like a franchise tag, where it's like you can give them more money or like... If like they don't have to return to the team, but it has to be like a sign-in trade kind of thing. So I think she would have to be in a sign-in trade situation. So if she does leave the Wings will at least get something back from a team. But it's interesting. So there's a lot of spicy things that could happen. And I feel like there could be a lot of movement. There could be no movement. Super teams are starting to become more of a thing in the WNBA. So who knows?
Yeah, we'll see if there's a lot going on in the next couple weeks, but it is kind of a cool time of year where, like, there are going to be a ton of NBA trades in the next 2 weeks, basically, and there could also be a lot of WNBA signings happening simultaneously, so it's kind of a fun little thing.
It's a perfect time of year for us. The fact that those line up is just absolutely fantastic, and here's hoping for lots of drama. We love drama, and let's hope for it. Now, final thing to close out Full Court Press is some goofiness and some silliness. And this is the tale of how Victor Wembanyama was, for a brief moment in time, Hector Banana Bread.
So, oh, I love it so much.
There's a Reddit, which I didn't know existed, called RNBA Talk, as opposed to just RNBA. I don't know exactly what makes this one different.
And not to be confused with NBAR. Which is cute.
The very cute one. I guess our NBA talk is people having conversations. It's a lot of like posting something and then trying to have like debates about players and all of that. But there was a post by user Rafe Cameron OBX, and the subject line is, I'm looking to buy an NBA jersey for my boyfriend, but I don't remember who his favorite player is. Can you guys help me out? My boyfriend is a huge NBA fan, and I want to surprise him with an NBA jersey of his favorite player. I could just ask him, but I want that to be the last option. He did tell me who his favorite player was a long time ago in conversation, but I have since forgotten. Here are some clues that could be helpful. 1. My boyfriend is 21. 2. He is a fan of the Lakers. 3. We live in Dallas, but he was born in Florida and raised in Georgia. He sometimes attends Mavs games. 4. I am absolutely certain this player is still in the NBA. 5. This one is pretty dumb, but I vaguely remember that the player's name sounded like Hector Banana Bread. However, if I put that name into Google, I just get banana bread recipes, so the name is probably way off. And the top response is someone going, Victor Wembanyama? And that's exactly who it was. It's so funny because the other four clues, unhelpful completely.
How does his age have any... I mean, I guess maybe because that would imply that he likes someone who's like a newer player? But
yeah, like, oh, this guy likes someone that is around his age. Like, I guess
the other clues are especially unhelpful because it turns out that it's Victor Wembanyama. Like, if it had been someone from Dallas or from Florida or from Los Angeles, then it would have been like, oh, I guess that was helpful. But I mean, I guess it helps that I don't think there's anyone else in the league whose name is Hector, right?
There's no Hectors and there's one Victor. That is the key. There was all this stuff going around. People were like, how did these people figure it out? It's because the only name close to Hector in the NBA is Victor.
And much Victor like Wembanyama. Mamawala, there's a lot of like A's going on in Wembanyama, so you can understand the banana bread.
Right. The thing that it tells you is like his first name sounds like Hector and his last name is long and has like a na-na-na noise. So those powers combined.
I'm sure someone's already done it, but to get a customized banana bread Wemby jersey.
Oh, yeah.
It would be such like a specific thing that almost no one would get it. But if someone did, they would think it was hilarious.
Yeah, I mean, the Spurs should get on it and do like Hector Banana Bread, like chef hat or apron. This happened when the Kings, do you remember the Sauce Castillo thing for Nick Stauskas?
Mm-mm.
There was a thing, it got popular on NBA social media. I think it started on Reddit, where someone was watching a Kings game with closed captioning on. And it's one of those live closed captioning. So it's people typing really quickly. And there's a lot of mistakes for those kind of closed captions.
Yeah.
And the announcer said, Stauskas for three, no, or Stauskas for three, oh. And it just got turned into Sauce Castillo. And it just became this funny thing because Nick Stauskas was this like pasty white dude. And all of a sudden now he's Sauce Castillo. But then the Kings did a Sauce Castillo night where they made Nick Stauskas hot sauce and they photoshopped him onto the Tapatio logo.
Amazing.
Wearing a sombrero and everything. And they did Sauce Castillo night. It was great. So we need Hector Banana Bread night where you can get oven mitts or a chef hat or aprons or something.
So, I mean, Sauce Castillo, Hector Banana Bread. Just, it's, as someone who has been misnamed once so egregiously that I was referred to as Andy Mariferna, mm-hmm. you got to just embrace it.
I was going to ask what's the worst one you got, but then I immediately knew the answer was
but it
you
happened
Andy
again
Mariferna.
Recently. I have that joke about someone like asking me to clarify my last name a million times and then introducing me with the wrong first name. Mm-hmm. And it happened like 2 weeks ago. A guy, a host of a show that I hadn't worked with, asked me to say Mama Walla a bunch of times and then introduced me as Alex Mama Walla.
I get it, though. They're so honed in on the hard part that they go with the four-letter, you know, male first name.
Yeah.
Like, they just go for that. I'll get Mark Schubert a lot. Like, I get it. Matt Schubert. I don't get upset at people. Like, you try. You're like, oh, white guy first name, four letters starts with M? Yeah. Like, you're close enough. You're totally fine. Final full court press thing. The shot clocks are changing from rectangles to circles. Apparently, they unveiled this at the Paris Games, which are happening as we record this. And my sneaky suspicion is that the shot clock sponsor is Tissot and has been Tissot for a while, and they make watches. And with the circle, it looks more like a watch. So I hate this.
Fair enough, but to make it fully full circle, you know where you can wear a Tissot? On your ankle.
On your... Perfect. And that concludes Full Court Press. Get it like the news.
All right, so for today's That Actually Happened, I'm going to talk about an event that might not sound improbable to you, but it was to me. I, Adam Amawala, went to a Chicago Bulls game in Chicago.
Ooh, yeah, baby.
Now, as far as I know, this was only the third time in my entire life I have been to a home Bulls game. The last time was to see the season opener for the 2016-2017 season during the same weekend that I saw the Cubs in the World Series, baseball reference. And that was actually the first game of the non-Derrick Rose era after the Bulls had traded him to the Knicks that offseason. It was also the first game of the incredibly bizarre Jimmy Butler, Dwayne Wade, Rajon Rondo
the
trio.
The three alphas era.
Yes, exactly.
Which we have done an episode about, I believe.
I believe so. The big three, but from Timu. And the Bulls...
the big three-moo.
Yeah, that's great. The Bulls surprisingly won that particular game. The only other record that I could find of me attending a game in Chicago was during the peak of the Derrick Rose era, when on February 15th, 2011... I watched the Bulls defeat the Charlotte Bobcats, who no longer are a team.
A moment in history.
Exactly. To propel their record to 37-17 and their home record to an impressive 24-4. That was the brief window where the Bulls were good in my adult life. just for fun, trivia for you. The Bulls had five players in double digits in that game. Can you name them?
Okay. What year is this again?
This is 2011. So this is the end of the 2010-2011 season.
Okay.
This is like the Derrick Rose MVP season.
Yeah, yeah. So Derrick Rose.
Yep.
Joakim Noah.
No, he did not play in this game.
Hmm. Luol Deng.
Correct. Deng led the team with 24. Rose had 18.
Okay. Taj Gibson.
Yep. He just got on the list with 11.
I guess. Was Jimmy Butler playing at this time?
No,
was
Jimmy.
It still, yeah.
I'm going to give you a hint for one of them. Someone who would get a rebound by yelling, give me that shit.
Oh, I was going to, okay, Boozer. My next one, I was literally going to say Carlos Boozer before you stopped me, so I don't feel bad about that.
Okay.
That's four. We need one more. Was Ben Gordon on the team?
I don't think so anymore, okay. But if so, he's not it.
CJ Miles? I'm trying to think who the shooting guard on this team
is. Do you want a clue?
Sure.
White guy.
White guy. Not Jason Capono?
No, but very much like in that
Kyle Korver?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Korver had 15. All right, final extra credit. Who played 1 minute and scored 0 points for the Bulls?
Cristiano Felicio.
Great guess. No, a different white
Jimmy
guy.
Jimmy Butler?
No.
Oh, different white guy.
Infamous,
white guy.
Famous,
oh, Scalabrine.
Yeah, the white mamba got in there for the... Stacey King used to call him the victory cigar. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I love it.
Oh, that's fun. That was fun.
But in any case, despite my lifelong adoration of the Bulls, my recent trip to a Bulls-Kings game was only my third time seeing them at home, and as it turned out, my first time seeing them lose. More on that later. Now, Shubes... I know. Given the fact that you moved from New Jersey to Texas as a kid and maintained your love of the Knicks and Yankees, I feel like you have more context for this than most. But when you're the fan of a different city's teams and you live in a new place, it kind of becomes like a bigger part of your identity. And so my life has been very much defined by being the guy in a home team stadium wearing the other team's jersey, so much so that I literally started a Cubs podcast called Away Games as a nod to that exact feeling. If I had to guess, and I wish I knew the exact numbers, but I would say in my lifetime, I've been to approximately like 100 Cubs games, 20 Bulls games, and 5 Bears games. And of those 100 plus games, maybe 10% have been in Chicago, probably less than that. So there's always this funny thing that happens when I'm in Chicago that I have to stop myself from getting excited every time I see a fellow weirdo like me in the wild. Like, yeah, anytime I see someone like a Cubs or Bulls or Bears gear, my brain is so hardwired to get excited by that, that I have to stop myself from being like, hey, go Cubs. Cause they're like, yeah, most of us feel that way. It's funny. At my zany show in Chicago, I actually joked about the fact that me choosing to commit to Chicago teams after moving to the East Coast has like in some ways defined the rest of my life, like not necessarily positively, but it's just, it's a choice that I made. But all of these experiences always make watching a game in Chicago that much more special because it's one of those rare times where I get to be part of the majority. I always tell people that one of the unique things about being biracial is that like you never really get to walk into a room full of people who are all the same as you. And this is kind of like the sports version of that for me. So let me walk you through my day, the highs, the lows, and the Benny of it all. Get ready with me as I go to the United Center. This was a week ago Sunday, January 12th, the same day that I had my big show at Zany's. And I had asked a few people if they wanted to go to the game with me. Nobody could attend since it was like a random 2:30 start time. And I ended up just going solo. And I even texted you about it. But like, honestly, man, I feel like going to things alone is so underrated sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's really good, especially sports. Anything, not just sports, but like for us sports, but if you're a sicko about the thing you're going to, it's really nice to go to it alone because then
that's the thing.
You don't have to spend any time talking or socializing. And like, even if you go to a game with a fellow sicko, like we've gone to sports games before and we still like talk to each other and stuff because we're friends. But like, there is the thing sometimes where I'm like, I don't remember a game as clearly, no matter who I'm going with, versus if I go alone, I feel like I can remember every detail.
Yeah.
Because you're just like locked in.
But it's totally true. You don't, if you're in like a social situation, you don't want to seem rude by like not talking to anyone, but also you're like, you're distracting me from the reason I'm here. Shut up.
Right. So alone stuff, super fun.
Yeah.
Sports or otherwise.
Agreed. So on that Sunday morning, I did the most Chicago pro move of all time when I preemptively called Lou Malnati's to to place a dine-in deep dish order before I got there because I know it takes like 30 to 40 minutes. So I was like, I'm going to eat in your restaurant, but can I order now? Nice. And then that way I will show up and it will be ready. And I ate, it was very interesting. It was like a carb-free deep dish. So instead of a crust, it was sausage as the crust. How do we feel about this?
I mean, I'm already very anti-deep dish because it's just lasagna that's pretending to be pizza. So this just makes it more lasagna. I mean, it does sound good.
It was
not
good.
Not to say that deep dish is not good. It's just not pizza.
Right.
Like, it's just a different food. Like, if they called it, like, deep dish pie and they leaned into pie as opposed to pizza, like... Yeah. I'd be totally fine with it. Or if it was just called like deep dish and there was no like pizza attached to it, but
that's
like, it tastes good. It's just not pizza, but like, that sounds pretty good. It's reminding me of like KFC Double Down where they're like,
it was very heavy.
Of course. Oh my God. Yeah. So you did that. Then you ran a 5K and then.
I should have. No, I hopped on the bus, the city bus to the United Center.
Nice.
Honestly, shout out to the CTA. I don't know what your experience has been like. I feel like Chicago subways and buses actually underrated. Run better than New York half the time, and especially on the weekends. They were pretty consistent. Also, it's $20 for an unlimited weekly pass. That's so cheap compared to New York.
That's pretty sweet. Yeah. I mean, they're definitely underrated. The times I've been in Chicago, maybe I'm just lucky in that, like, I happen to be near transit, but, like, I take it more than one would think, and it works out quite well.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they got public transit to and from the airport, right? So that's huge.
That's huge, like, yeah. That's and, like, enormous. On a train, you don't have to, like, take a bus to a train to a whatever. Right. So that's pretty sweet. But I got to the stadium pretty early. I was hoping to go take a photo of the famous Michael Jordan statue, but I couldn't remember, like, what side of the building it was on. And I asked a very annoyed parking attendant, and she said, "I have no idea," which I found surprising. Like, you work at the United Center. You would think you would know where that is, but that's okay. But I got there early in the hopes that I could catch some warm-ups, and quickly found out that they have really beefed up security there, and they will not let you go down to the lower section unless you have a ticket. I did end up talking to a kind older security guard who let me pop down and take a couple quick pictures, and he very sweetly said, "You never asked me that, and I never said yes, but I'd really like to keep my job, so please come back quickly." So I adhered to his demands, and when I thanked him on my way out, he said, "For what?" and then winked at me like we were in a sitcom.
That's good. Yeah, I like this person.
It was solid. At that point, I decided to take a lap around the stadium, which has undergone some pretty major renovations and improvements since I was last there. And at one point, the concourse got, like, weirdly congested, and I was trying to figure out what was going on. But as it turns out, the Bulls have all six of the Larry O'Brien NBA championship trophies displayed behind what I can only assume is incredibly strong glass with a lot of cameras and, you know, security stuff. But everyone was gathered there taking photos. I had someone take one of me, naturally, but I just, like, kind of stood there looking at them for a long time. I know so much about each of those Bulls seasons, and it's like with each trophy, I can picture different iconic photos of someone holding it. Like, the 1991 trophy to me stood out because there's a very famous photo of Michael Jordan, like, clutching the trophy and crying after he finally wins his first championship. It's one that there's, like, a Kobe version of also that was, like, very much in that same vein. And also seeing the one from the Last Dance season and everything like that, like, just very cool to look at. They didn't seem to have a lot of other memorabilia in the way that the Knicks do a really good job at MSG, where, like, as you're walking around, it's like, oh, there's Bernard King's jersey, and there's, like, Willis Reed's warm-ups.
Yeah, it's basically a museum, the first floor of MSG.
Yeah, it's pretty sweet. But, yeah, seeing all the trophies was very cool. And I don't, maybe they had that the last time I was there, but I don't have a specific memory of having seen it. At that point, I popped into the team store to look around, and it was honestly just a reminder of the fact that the whole, like, city jersey thing is really just a way to sell more shit. Like, it feels like, some of it's pretty cool, but I don't know. It just feels kind of transparent. But
this season in particular, it's egregious because it's very clear that they're just, like, taking the City Edition design and putting it on everything and just trying to have, like, new stuff in the team store every year. Cause, like, the Knicks have the one with the New York, New York and the pinstripes, and, like, they have that as the jersey and a hat and shirts and jackets. And it's, like, clearly they're just trying to, like, get stuff and sell as much as they can this year and then do it again next year. And, you know, they're just, I'm sure there's lots of people who are like, oh, it's the City Edition. And then they just buy, like, a bunch of it. It sucks.
Yeah, I mean, whatever. It's a business.
Because, like, at least, and I was going through this when I went to the World Series with the Yankees, and there's, like, a ton of World Series stuff. But, like, you're in the World Series. So, like,
yes.
It's, like, taking that kind of phenomenon where someone's like, oh, I want to buy all the stuff that says World Series on it, and you're just doing it, like, every single year. Ugh. Like, jerseys are one thing, but it's just, like, it's just so clearly a money grab from the NBA that they're never going to stop doing it, which stinks.
Yeah. I feel like it would be much more palatable if every City Edition thing was like, oh, half of the money from these is going to, like, local charities or something like that.
Sure.
Which, not that the NBA doesn't do charitable stuff, but still.
Right.
So I was able to catch the end of warmups from my seat in the nosebleeds. And that was cool because this game was DeMar DeRozan's return to Chicago with the Sacramento Kings. So I could see him, like, chatting and catching up with a lot of the Bulls players. The game kicked off with a national anthem from an apparently notable 9-year-old singer known as National Anthem Girl, who did a very nice job. And then it was time for the opposing team's intros. The Bulls PA announcer wisely opted to announce DeRozan's name last, and he got a big round of applause. Honestly, not as, like, big of a reception as I thought he would have, but I guess in fairness, he was only there for 3 years, and they kind of sucked for, like, 2.5 of the three, so it is what it is.
Yeah.
Then it was time for the world-famous Bulls intro, and I gotta say, even though the Bulls are not the most intimidating team on the floor, the intro still goes incredibly hard. Like that,
yeah, the music
it is.
Slaps.
It's so iconic. Levine definitely got the biggest crowd pop during intros, which makes sense because he's been playing very well. And then it was time to tip off. Unfortunately, I found myself in a section with like two incredibly loud fans for two completely different reasons. In one case, it was actually very sweet because there was a young boy with Down syndrome, like decked out in Bulls gear, just like losing his shit in the best possible way every time the Bulls scored. And I very much enjoyed that. But then not far from him, there was a woman who was either like drunk or high or both, who was loud to a point that like other sections were aware of it. And it was one of those things where I'm like, man, I'm like at this game by myself. I'm trying to enjoy the experience and lock in. And I genuinely can't focus on anything other than how annoying this is. But if there's anything good about the fact that the Bulls are not so good, there were empty seats. So like little by little, people started leaving. Like, I don't think anyone wanted to start a fight. So people would just quietly be like, hey, let's get the fuck out of here. And then just like whole families were leaving. And so I was like, I got to get out of here before I miss my chance to relocate. So I ended up giving myself a free seat upgrade. And I sat more like kind of in the center part of the stadium. But now to the most important part of this recap, the in-between stuff that you see on League Pass, but I got to see in person.
Live. Yeah, baby.
The Bulls really do a good job with these. They knock it out of the park. From memory, I saw a child DJ. I think it was like Kids Day or something, hence the national anthem and the DJ and some YouTuber asshole who they kept involving in things for no reason. But I saw a child DJ. I saw an air mattress race. Where kids would
an
like
an air mattress race.
Yeah. So it was like a kid and an adult, and there was an air mattress, and the idea was like you run and kind of dive on it and slide as far as it can go. And then
that
you have to
rips.
Run back and tag someone else, and they have to run and slide on it as far as they can go. It
That's
was fun.
So cool. Yeah. I like that a lot.
I was very afraid though. It was like set up in such a way where if the air mattress stuck on the floor and then someone slid off, they would like knock their teeth out. I was like, I hope the Bulls have tested this with other people before they let children do it. But it ended up being fine. Of course, the Lovables, which are the Bulls dancers, were there.
Yeah.
There was a halftime show featuring children doing insanely impressive jump rope tricks called the King's Firecrackers.
Okay.
Whose website states that their mission is, quote, to improve a child's opportunity for success in life through a program that demands discipline, responsibility, dedication, and community consciousness. And based on the performance, I would say that they practice quite a bit. It was very awesome. Now, as for Benny, you know he was up to all sorts of nonsense, including, but not limited to, twerking and gyrating, despite the fact that it was Kids Day, running around in the stands, messing with refs, pouring popcorn all over everyone in one particular section, which, by the way, I have since looked into, and it is something that the Bulls sell as like being part of, quote, Benny's splash zone. So I'm happy to announce that there is, in fact, consent for his popcorn-related antics.
I have like it's always the same section. So like if you buy a ticket in this section,
you can
you know
specifically buy a ticket to like section 135 or whatever. And that's always the place that Benny does his.
That's so smart because
thing.
Then I'm sure there is some sort of like cleaning protocol for that section where like they put like extra layers of nonstick something. like laminate to make
I'm
sure.
I'm hoping it's not buttered popcorn because that seems like it would be
I would imagine that they utilize like stale popcorn that cannot be sold for health concerns.
Yes.
Like with no butter. Yeah.
Yeah. But as for other Benny related stuff, he also did some crazy like trampoline dunks. And it always makes me wonder, like, is it the same Benny the whole game? Are there multiple? Is there like a different like gymnastics Benny who comes out and does stuff? I want to think it's the same guy.
I would imagine it's got to be the same. I just think you don't get that job unless you can handle that kind of stuff. Kind of like in college, how the mascots are usually like someone who would be a male cheerleader, or if the mascot's tiny enough, like a woman.
Yeah.
So I think they just hire athletic, acrobatic people who can
handle
task.
But yeah, he did his classic backwards, one-handed, half-court, three-point attempts.
Unfortunately,
he didn't sink one. He got really close, but he didn't make one.
I mean, that's such a hard ask, especially in a suit. Like, it's hard to do on its own, but you're wearing a big furry suit. Come on, man.
They do a very cool t-shirt toss/t-shirt drop where they'll like drop little parachute t-shirts
from the
catwalk, which is also very fun. But yeah, in general, very, very well done. The game itself was back and forth with a lot of lead changes and ties. Neither team really ever took control until, I guess, the final minute of the game. If I have one other bone to pick, and I think you'll very much agree with me on this, it's that sports betting has ruined fandom for some people and for the people sitting around them, because there was a dude in the section that I moved to who was rooting for the Bulls, but then also it became clear that he was like cheering for DeRozan. And at first I was like, okay, that's fair. Like, he used to play here. Maybe you like are still rooting for the guy. But then he was like yelling at his buddy next to him about like the exact number of points that he needed DeRozan to get to win his prop bet or whatever. And he was like screaming about it. And it was very annoying. Mind you, this is like a 60 something year old man living and dying with every shot that DeRozan takes, screaming, I just need one more. I just need one more. And I don't think he ever got that one more. And honestly, it was very satisfying.
Yeah. I mean, it's a part of why I don't play fantasy basketball anymore. Is there was one time I was at a game and one of the people on the court was on my fantasy team. And I was just like so focused on seeing if this guy would get like rebounds or assists and stuff that I was just like, why am I focusing on this? Like, I'm live at a basketball game.
Yeah.
I should be watching the basketball, not like worrying about if Alec Burks is getting a rebound. Like, this is absurd.
Nobody should be worrying about that.
No, not at all. Alec Burks is fine for us. But yeah. I want to be watching like the Knicks, not being like, come on, one player on
exactly.
The Knicks.
Yeah. But yeah, in the final stretch of the game, the Bulls did the most Bulls thing possible and down 3 points with a chance to tie the game. They just didn't inbound the ball in time. They got a 5-second violation and they ended up losing. It was disappointing, albeit predictable way to finish the game. But it was a hell of a fun day. And I'm grateful anytime I get to see one of my teams in person in their home stadium, even if they stink. And that actually happened.
Fantastic. I'm so glad you got to go. I'm glad you got the surprisingly rare experience of being at a home game for your favorite team.
Yeah,
so
it was fun.
1, 2, 3, 3, 2, 1. 3-on-3.
Alrighty, so for this 3-on-3, I have put together one. I've wanted to do this for a while, and now timeline-wise, it's going to make sense because this episode will be coming out in late January, and that means that NBA All-Star Weekend is soon approaching. Everyone do your civic duty and vote for Jalen Brunson and Karl Anthony Towns and the rest of the New York Knicks if you'd like to. But we will be having the All-Star Weekend in the Golden State Warriors territory of San Francisco in mid-February, as we always do. And because of that, I've got a 3-on-3 prepared where it is all centered around defunct NBA All-Star Weekend events. But I'm going to do the three best and the three worst NBA All-Star Weekend events that are no longer in existence.
I love that.
Should I start with the bad or the good?
This is a tough one. You know what? Start with the good, because I feel like the bad might be funnier.
Okay, we'll start. No, actually, one of the ones I've picked is truly wild. My number one for the best thing is something I didn't know existed, and it's hype as hell. So
all right,
let's actually start with the bad. So number three worst, I have the Clorox Clutch Challenge, which unsurprisingly was in the 2022 All-Star Game. That's when
that
Clorox was really trying to make a big push. So this was an event that was pretty similar to one that is defunct that I will be talking about in the good section, but involved teams of two, and they used people from the Rising Stars game, so it was a lot of like younger players, and there were five spots on the court that they had to hit shots from, and they had to like alternate like who's shooting from each spot, and then you get to like the final spot, which was like a logo shot. And then that was the last one. And then if you made that, you win. It's fine, but it was just kind of like make a layup, make a corner three, make an elbow jumper, make a three from the top of the key, and then make the logo shot. And it just like wasn't particularly interesting.
Right.
And there are other similar versions of this type of event that have happened in the past that are far more interesting, that this one is just like, okay, I think they just did it because they had gotten rid of some of the other ones. And they're like, what if we brought it back and did this? And I think they brought it back and it was just worse.
Fair enough.
Number two for bad defunct thing is something that sounds good, but when you read more about it, realize probably wasn't. This is the Legends Classic, which I didn't know existed, but it's basically like an old timer's day for basketball.
Okay.
So this ran from 1984 to 1993, and it was a game featuring retired NBA players. They had East and West, and it was the first event of NBA All-Star Saturday, which traditionally has the three-point contest and the dunk contest and then sometimes some other stuff. So they had this going for a while, but they canceled it after its last run in 1993 because players were getting frequently injured.
Well, yeah, who could have predicted that?
What's really fun is Wikipedia had a list of these just so I could make sure I wasn't forgetting any of them. And their description of the Legends Classic was very funny because it says, quote, perhaps due to the large range in fitness levels among younger and older alumni. And then it has citation needed. Like, no, you just obvious. If you're over the age of 40 playing basketball, you're gonna get hurt.
Well, that's why. And even like the Yankees, I think, still do an old timers day. And it's always funny, even the same thing like the celebrity softball game, right? Like you'll have someone who was a pitcher in the 80s and has like a huge pot belly and is like putzing around out there. And then you have someone who retired last year and is ripping line drives at 140 miles an hour. You're like, this is not a good idea. We've got people like professional athletes mixing, at least in this case, they all used to play professionally versus the celeb game where it's like a former player and then like a TikTok star who's going to get broken in half, which I'm fine with, but you know.
The Yankees actually stopped doing it. They still have Old Timers Day, but now they just do like an interview kind of thing. And the rumor is because Derek Jeter has started coming to these, but Derek Jeter doesn't want to be seen playing baseball and not being good, which like I can understand, but like, come on, Old Timers Day was fun.
Yeah.
So they got rid of it and then established the Rising Stars Challenge as its replacement. And apparently also in the past, prior to the Legends Classic, there was a game literally called the Old Timers Game, and that existed from the 1957 through the 1964 seasons. So, like, I get doing this, but I can also get why watching this would, like, not be that exciting. Because it's just, like, the other end of the spectrum of, like, when kids do a game of 5-on-5 at halftime at an NBA game. But that's fun because it's kids. Seeing old people who used to be good not be as good is kind of like, okay. Like, oh, yeah, go for it, Magic Johnson. Oh, he's missing most of his shots. So just like, meh. Number one is surprising given the title of this podcast is horse. They've done horse a couple of times at NBA All-Star Weekend.
I feel like I remember this. I remember Kevin Durant doing it one time.
He did it twice.
Oh,
so they've done it three times. They've done it in 2008. I think they did like some other horse type things earlier back in time, but I don't think it was part of All-Star. Like something popped up on YouTube where there was like a horse challenge between like Pete Maravich and George Gervin, but I don't think it was an All-Star Weekend thing. But they definitely did it in 2008, 2009, and then they did it in 2020. Remember they did the remote horse thing when they had to do like a remote NBA All-Star game and people were like doing horse like over Zoom, shooting shots from their backyards and stuff, which I was very mad about because it was inconsistent
during that time. That if you watch it now, it'd be like, I can't believe we watched this. Like,
see, while everyone was doing that, Kelly and I, we were beating the Kingdom Hearts games. And like, I missed all of the bad TV thing because we were just playing video games. It was great.
Yeah, it was painful for a while there.
So in 2008 and 2009, they did it. In the 2000, I can't remember the years of it, but I watched both of these last night. One of them was indoor, and it was Durant, Rondo, and Omri Caspi, everyone's favorite player.
And then Caspi, the friendly ghost.
And then there was an outdoor one, and it was Durant and Joe Johnson, and I forget the third player. The outdoor one was more fun because it was outdoors. There were people all around the court and like people were actually doing different kind of things. In the indoor one, as it got later on, the clip that I found on YouTube was only like the final thing as like Rondo was getting eliminated to Durant. And they were just shooting top of the break threes. So I think what must have happened is like they did enough stuff and then they just like didn't know what to do. So then they were just like shooting jump shots and that was it.
Yeah.
And the players weren't trying particularly hard, which I completely understand. You don't want to get hurt doing the horse challenge at All-Star.
Right.
But I just feel like horse is something that often comes up as like, this would be fun, but it's not that fun to watch. And even horse, like, I don't even like playing horse. It's not that fun to play even. Like,
nah. I liked it because I spent arguably too much time doing like weird, silly layups and stuff in my driveway.
Right.
And I thought I could always like eliminate people with those.
I think as a kid, it's very fun because you're just trying to do like goofy trick shots. And I think this would be more fun if they really tried to encourage doing goofy stuff and wild things like they do in the dunk contest, like more bounce shots or through the legs things. In the outdoor one, there was a thing where Joe Johnson did like a through the leg left-handed layup. So like there was some fun stuff, but I was watching these and I was like, yeah, these are not fun. Like it just wasn't as compelling as you would think it was. So I think it's fine that it was scrapped. Alrighty, now let's bring it to the top three good stuff. So for number three, I'm going with the two ball, Sony All-Star two ball. Do you remember two ball?
I don't remember two ball.
So two ball didn't have a lot of run. They did it in 98, 2000, and 2001. Two ball involved having two player teams, one of which was in the NBA and one of which was in the WNBA. And at least at the 2000 All-Star game, which I was able to watch the full two ball event on YouTube, it had players from the same locales. So there would be Becky Hammon from the New York Liberty and then Allen Houston from the New York Knicks, or Steve Francis from the Houston Rockets. And was it, it wasn't Cheryl Swoops. I think it was Cooper, I believe, from the Houston Comets.
But in any case, it was city counterparts.
Exactly. I was just surprised it wasn't Cheryl Swoops. Maybe she was busy doing other stuff. But yeah, it was city counterparts, like someone from the Detroit Shock and the Detroit Pistons, stuff like this. And the way it worked is you had a minute, so a 60-second shot clock, and then there were eight markers on the court.
Okay, I remember this. I don't think I remembered it being called that.
Yeah, so there was a big two underneath the basket, which was a layup, and you could only do two of these, which makes sense. Otherwise, you would just do the George Mikan drill and just do layups for a minute. So there was a big two underneath. Then there was a three at like the dotted line when the circle part of the foul line circle continues. There was a four at the foul line. There was a five, kind of like an elbow jumper. Then there was a six in the corner, but not a corner three, like a corner two. Then there was a seven, like right at the point in the 3-point line where the arc meets the straight line portion of the corner three. So like the very end of the wing, but it was still in 2-point territory. And then there was a three, just like a wing three opposite this. And that was worth 8 points. So they had to alternate shots. So like an NBA player would shoot, then the WNBA player would shoot, and you go back and forth. You couldn't travel or do anything else. So like you would have to either get to the new spot, receive the pass from your teammate, dribble. Like you couldn't just like run. And then you would go to then the top two teams would advance to a final round. And then if there was a tie, teams would go again, but they'd only have 24 seconds to get as many points. And what was fun about this is that you have these two players going, they're alternating, but there's strategy, right? Like, do you shoot a bunch of threes because they're just worth so much more? Or do you try to do some of the shorter ones? When do you do the layups? And I'm watching this and people didn't do their maximum amount of layups. I'm like, it's for free points. Like right in the beginning, you should have the NBA player and the WNBA player right next to each other and go layup, layup, and then do the other stuff. Like I was screaming at them for not having strategy. What was also cool is that they had microphones loud enough where you could hear the players talking. So on this clip, it was Derek Fisher of the Lakers and Lisa Leslie of the Sparks. And she was asking Derek which ball they wanted to use. Like there was a ball, I guess they're warming up with, and there were new balls. And she asked Derek, like, do you want the new ball or the one we were using? And he goes, doesn't matter which one, the shot's going in. Which, like, damn,
did he
that's
make it
pretty
though?
Cool. Yes.
Okay, good.
It was pretty sweet. So that was like before it started. So it was
Is
cool.
she taller
like,
than him?
Oh, let's see. I don't, they might be similar. I think maybe Lisa.
That's
Leslie
a funny thing, like the juxtaposition of like someone who's very tall in the WNBA.
And she's 6'5".
He's
Derek Fisher. He might be 6'4".
I would guess like 6'4".
He 6'3". Was 6'1". Wow. So she had some height on him.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you're right. Like the tallest player in the WNBA is like, you know, a sizable forward
exactly,
in the NBA.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was just cool. It had strategy. There was prize money if you won and stuff. I thought it was cool. I enjoyed it. I like it a lot. If it came back, I'd be hype. Especially now we see like the Steph Sabrina thing. Like
for sure.
Yeah, let's get more crossing over. Similarly, my number two selection is Hoop It Up. Do you remember Hoop It Up?
Mm-mm.
So Hoop It Up didn't have a huge run. It was only 2002 and 2003, but it was a 3-on-3 game. And the teams were comprised of four people each, and you could sub them out. It was an NBA player, current, a WNBA player, current, an NBA legend, and then a celebrity.
Oh, no. That's where it always goes awry.
So the Hoop It Up game that I was watching was between Los Angeles and Atlanta. And the Los Angeles team had Lisa Leslie is a WNBA player. Some dude on the Clippers that I honestly didn't recognize as the NBA player. Magic Johnson as the legend. And then Ashton Kutcher as the celebrity.
Oh, wow.
Then the Atlanta team had Cheryl Swoops as the WNBA player. I didn't know that she played for Atlanta. I thought she, I guess Houston was defunct at some point.
Yeah, maybe.
But then you had Dominique Wilkins as the cool. Atlanta legend. Mm-hmm. And then it was Jason Terry as the current Hawk sure. player. And then Frankie Muniz as the celebrity who hit an NBA three in Ashton Kutcher's face.
Frankie Muniz was like famously a big Clippers fan.
Oh, interesting. But he was on yeah. the Atlanta team. I guess he's from there, maybe?
Yeah, I don't
either
know.
That I mean, he's got him.
Maybe he's from there, or maybe he just like wanted to be involved. And
or I guess he was
like,
living in LA, so acting. So maybe he became a Clippers fan, even though he was like from Atlanta. But whatever it was just like straight up 3-on-3 basketball. Like they had a clock, and then they just went. They subbed out the WNBA players for the celebrities at one point, and like I don't know, it was fun. Like Magic was making some cool plays. Dominique Wilkins got an alley-oop, like and legit dunked,
and dunked it.
Like yeah, it was genuinely very compelling.
Fun
it was fun.
I've met both of those celebrities.
Oh, were they nice?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Frankie Muniz was very, very nice. He was at one of those like college conferences that I used to do, like where you showcase as a comedian. He was in a band at that time.
Ah,
and cool. funny enough, I didn't even, I'm sure everyone was talking to him about like Malcolm in the Middle. I talked to him about the Clippers. I was like, yeah, I know
yes.
you're a big Clippers fan. And I think he
Heck
enjoyed
yeah.
that, like I knew that.
Awesome.
Ashton Kutcher, I met briefly at the Chicago Bears bar that I go to. He was there with Mila Kunis watching the Bears. He's a big Bears fan.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
It was fun. I mean, it was cool just to see 3-on-3, and it allowed you to see what all the different players were good at and stuff, and the celebrities going at each other was fun. Like, Frankie Muniz was trying to break Ashton Kutcher's ankles. It was just kind of fun. Like, it's the perfect kind of, like, silly little thing where you get to see a little bit of all these different types of NBA stuff, which
yeah.
I think is good. I'm also now realizing that I had kind of done like a sneaky thing for how I was going to get one in, but I forgot to do this. So let me just reiterate before we get to the number one, maybe I'll call it like my 1.5. The reason I didn't like the Clorox Clutch Challenge, it's just a worse version of the Shooting Stars Challenge. Do you remember the Shooting Stars
yes,
Challenge?
Yes, yes.
That
yes.
ripped. I loved it. So that was from 2004 to 2015. So it was like a proper staple. And
yeah.
the teams, similarly, you had one NBA legend, one WNBA player, and then one current NBA player on the team.
Wasn't it that you had to hit like a layup, a free throw, a three, and a half court shot or something like
yes.
that?
Yes. So you had to make, it wasn't necessarily a layup. It was just kind of like a short two, like bank shot kind of area.
Which like they always struggle with the most because it's like an awkward in-between shot.
And what was unfair and people didn't know is that they were using NBA basketballs and the WNBA uses a smaller ball. So like when the women would miss some shots, people would be like, oh, aren't they good? It's like, this is a different ball. This is such a different weird shot for them. So
yeah.
you had to make that a free throw shot, like top of the key-ish, and then a wing three, and then a half court shot. But just like inherently, the event always ended with someone making a half court shot. So it always ripped. And what was wild is, I mean, these are all professional basketball players. Like it never took them that long to make the half court shot. Like it was always cool to be like, oh, Chris Bosh's second attempt. And it's just all three of them just like going like shoot, 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 shoot. It was so fun. So that was a way where I could sneakily talk about the Shooting Stars Challenge, which I love. And I would honestly love for them to bring it back. It was always so fun because it just always ended on a cool moment. It was great. Super great. Okay, so now for my number one. This I did not know existed, but it's gone through a couple of different names slash iterations. It was first called the Stay in School Jam slash Stay in School Celebration. Then it became the Team Up Celebration. And then it became the Read to Achieve Celebration. This was basically at NBA All-Star Weekend, one of the nights, they would have a concert with a bunch of talented artists from whatever time that was, and it would be some sort of benefit for children. So there was always like raising money and sending some sort of positive message for children. But I'm definitely going to put the link to this one on the episode page of horsehoops.com. But one of them, the Stay in School Jam, had the performance. It's the song What's Up Doc in parentheses Can We Rock by Foo Schnickens and Shaquille O'Neal, which is actually like a legitimately
Foo
good
Schnickens?
Song. Foo Schnickens, baby. Can We
the
Rock?
Hell?
What's Up Doc? They had this song with Shaq,
F-O-O?
Where Shaq's verse, F-U hyphen Schnickens, S-C-H-N-I-C-K-E-N-S. This song is very good. it's a great, it's one of those classic, like, 90s, like, oh, yo, what did it do, ba-da-ba? Like, one of those, like, you know, can we rock? What's up, doc? Like, it's great. Mm-hmm. And Shaq's verse is legitimately very good. And they performed it live, Shaq rapping live, legitimately, like, rocking the mic. It's so good. So they had all these different people. They had, like, at one of them, they had the Quad City DJs, and they did Come On, Ride the Train, and
everybody
then, like, the 2000s.
Get up, it's
yeah,
time
they also did the Space
down.
Jam song. Like, they also had one where, like, Britney Spears was doing it in the 2000s. So they would get, like, legit artists. They would do a big concert. It was all for the kids. They had a bunch of kids, like, in the crowd, kind of like when.
You know what it is? It's like the NBA version of, like, Arthur Ashe Kids Day for the US Open.
It's super cool. It was awesome. The music slapped. The artists were great. The songs are good. The performances are on YouTube. Highly recommend checking it out. It was cool. Bring back the some sort of thing that benefits children with talented musicians. Paula Abdul was there at one of them. Bring it back. It's cool. I don't want to see Zedd performing at the NBA All-Star Weekend, which he is doing. I want to see rappers and money going to children.
I love that. And I'm going to spend $8 and get you a cameo from Fushnickens for your birthday coming up.
Oh, it'd be great. Maybe they'll ask me.
He's going to pay me $8.
And they'll ask me if we can rock. And I'll say, yes, we can.
That was great.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Four Sources, hosted by Adam Amawala and Mike Schubert. Our editors, Kensei Saramaki. The music is by Bettina Kumamanis. The art by Allison Wickman. And the social media is by both of the Horse Boys. And the website's by Kelly Schubert.
Thank you to our producer-level patrons, Polly Burridge, Salvatore Testa, Siobhan Ellsbury, Don't Go Chasing Taco Falls, Bang, Bang, Roast Beef Debris, Denver Steam Nuggets, Anna Reed, Steph Curry, Missed a Shot, and I Saw Video Evidence.
Clunk.
Mm-hmm. No bang on that one. Hi, Trish. Chase Underulo, Naked Rachel, Sidney Crosby as a Vampire, Chelsea's Cousin, Ginger Spurs Boy, Balls to the Walls, and Mats Furli. You can follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Horse Hoops and on Twitter at Horse_Hoops because...
Horse Hoops was run by that annoying person in the crowd near you at the Bulls game. Just had to get rid of that account.
God, shut up. You're not in your living room. There are other people here. I think some people forgot how to act after COVID, man.
They did. They did.
They did. They did indeed. But you can go to our website, horsehoops.com, for links to some of the many fun things we talked about today, including, I'm hoping, this Fushnickens and Shaq performance, if it exists.
Oh, it does. The performance is there. I'll put a link to, like, the actual song, too. It's good stuff. It's good stuff.
Love it.
Really good
love
stuff.
It, love
at one point, Shaq says supercalifragilisticexpialidocious in his verse.
Yeah, I mean.
It's just perfect.
It's beyond reproach.
Amazing. If you want to support the Horse Boys, you can go to patreon.com/horsehoops, and you can also go to horsehoops.com/merch. We've got digital merch and physical merch. The horse shirts, the Subnerds basketball shirts, are currently on sale, so you can get a deal while it's hot. But we're going to conclude this episode by saying something, as we always do, on the count of three. Feeling anything in particular?
Well, I don't want to end the episode on too serious of a note, but I will say, to anybody in the Los Angeles area who's been dealing with it in recent weeks, we're very much thinking of you. And to anybody in the country who, at this moment, given who has recently become our president again, is feeling less safe than ever, you're not alone in feeling that way. It sucks. I wish we could end by saying it gets better, but I can't guarantee that, and I'm not going to put my name behind it, but I think maybe a hang in there.
Either that or like a we got you. Kind of like the message earlier, like, no matter what, we're going to keep making the show, and if that helps
exactly
escape the crap of the
world, we would love to be a distraction for about an hour once every 2 weeks. So yeah, we'll go with the we got you.
We got you on three. 1, 2, 3.
We got you.
Cool.
All right. I'm off to hang with Fushnickens. See you next time.